Why do we exist? Were we created with a purpose? Or are we just here by chance? What are we to believe about life, faith, and worldview? Welcome to The Universe Next Door, focusing on answers to the questions we all consider. The Universe Next Door is supported by the C.S. Lewis Society, Trinity College of Florida, and supported by gifts from listeners just like you. Discover more resources and continue the conversation at apologetics.org. And now, your host, the research professor of Bible and theology at Trinity College of Florida, author and speaker, Dr. Tom Woodward.
Welcome to The Universe Next Door. We hope you are having a great week or weekend. We are excited to be here with our returning guest from last week, Dr. Casey Luskin. Casey, thank you for being here again today. I think I will speak for all of our listeners when I say last week was a lot of fun. I learned a lot, and I hope everybody did as well. But how are you doing today?
It's great to be back with you guys. And yeah, it's fun to be back with you guys.
Absolutely. And Dr. Woodward, how are you doing?
I'm progressing with great joy, and the opportunities to teach intelligent design and the flaws in neo-Darwinism, and also to incredibly encourage students at our college, Trinity College of Florida, of course, is where I've been able to teach these last 33 years. And it's exciting to see bright new students just coming into the college and biting down, as it were, onto the bread of apologetics. They're really getting some, I think, encouragement from the science side, and we're going to be studying the historical biblical side here in the fall. So Nick, isn't it absolutely mind-boggling and crazy and wonderful that we have with us at our February 18th virtual banquet, Keith and Kristen Getty, connecting virtually from across the pond in Northern Ireland? I think that's just amazing. They're such great producers and singers of beautiful Christian music.
Oh, absolutely. They're one of my favorites. And the way they basically write modern hymns is very encouraging for me, because that's one of my favorite styles of worship music. But yeah, they're wonderful.
And that's really amazing to me is that they've been able to, for the last 12 or 15 years, continue to pour out hymns that are as powerful as anything that Charles Wesley or Isaac Watts or the other great hymn writers of the 1700s and 1800s have ever produced, including, of course, In Christ Alone, which we already played a few weeks back. But I'd like to feature today one of my favorite hymns. It's from the In Christ Alone album, and it's called There Is a Higher Throne. And it's just a beautiful hymn of worship and praise, and it has powerful, scriptural truth woven throughout it. Let's give it a listen as we bring in Keith and Kristen Getty, one of their greatest songs of all time, There Is a Higher Throne.
Hear heaven's voices sing.
is such an amazing modern hymn. I love the, not only song, but the lyrics are so biblical and unforgettable. And of course, as we said last week, you can look them up on, you know, any Google search program by just putting in Keith and Kristen Getty, G-E-T-T-Y. And then, of course, the name of the song, There Is a Higher Throne. You can just put the word lyrics and it'll take you right to the page where you can grab them and keep a copy. And so you can sing along the next time you play that number on either your CD or your iPad or iPod, whatever you use for listening. So we are excited to go back into this realm of, with Casey Luskin, this realm of state of the science, so to speak. It's like the State of the Union address, but this is the State of Intelligent Design Science. And we're going to be discussing today some of the stories, some of the shocks that are really coming out from the scientific world that are really puzzling, almost like embarrassing for neo-Darwinism orthodoxy. But Casey, you have come back into the same wonderful organization, Discovery Institute, where you served before. And when you left, you know, to begin your own research in geology, some people were saying, oh, he's fading out or something like that. And Bill Dembski, I think maybe at the same time, there was some rumors or statements, inaccurate, many of them, that what was going on with the two of you. Share that story, if you will. I think that's a good segue right back into where we were.
Yeah, so it's a funny story, Tom. When I left Discovery Institute at the very end of 2015, I put up a farewell post on evolutionnews.org where I explained I was leaving Discovery Institute to pursue my lifelong goal of furthering my studies. I left that intentionally vague because I knew that there are quite a few anti-ID folks out there who actually actively persecute ID-friendly students and will harass their advisors, harass their administrations, and try to basically prevent ID-friendly students from getting their degrees. So I didn't want to put too much information out there about what I was doing and where I was going, but what I said was true. I was going on to further my studies. But of course, because I was a little bit unclear on what exactly where I was going, the Darwin crowd on the internet loved to speculate about what was really going on. And I think they were sort of hopefully speculating that they said things like that I had jumped ship, or I had abandoned ID, or I had some said I had been fired from Discovery Institute for being ineffective or something. I don't know. All kinds of crazy conspiracy theories that people were saying. Around the same time, Bill Dembski actually announced that he had retired from intelligent design. This led some critics to say that Bill had sort of rejected his earlier work on intelligent design. Well, none of these speculations from the Darwin crowd were true. First of all, I did not jump ship or any of that. I simply went on to do something different for a few years to go get my PhD, and my support for intelligent design never has wavered during that time. Bill Dembski also went on to pursue some other interests outside of ID. But what's interesting is that now in the year 2021, we're both coming back and actually collaborating on some projects together, showing that we were never abandoning intelligent design as the critics had hoped. We're still very much pro-ID. And in fact, there are two projects that Bill and I are both collaborating on right now. One is we are actually co-editing, along with a wonderful guy, a philosopher named Joseph Holden. We're co-editing a volume with Harvest House titled The Comprehensive Guide to Science and Faith, Exploring the Ultimate Questions About Life and the Cosmos. And this is going to come out later in 2021, probably around October. You can probably find it on Amazon and similar websites already. But this is going to be a fantastic book. It's going to have contributions from many leading ID theorists like Stephen Meyer, Michael Behe, Jonathan Wells, Brian Miller, Henry Schaefer, Douglas Axe. I could keep going down the list. Pretty much almost a who's who of people in intelligent design who have contributed to this. And it's going to have very comprehensive yet fairly tight chapters that cover major ID topics. So I would highly encourage folks who kind of want like a one-stop shop to learn a huge amount about intelligent design and also other science and faith issues, to check out this book that Bill Dembski and I are co-editing, The Comprehensive Guide to Science and Faith. Another project that Bill and I are both a part of is Discovery Institute's annual Dallas Conference on Science and Faith that's happening on February 20th in Dallas. People can attend either in person or they can, of course, attend online because of COVID. We certainly understand that many folks are not able to attend in person these days. If anyone would like more information, you can go to discovery.org/Dallas. That's discovery.org/Dallas for more information on the Discovery Institute's 2021 Dallas Conference on Science and Faith. And I will be there speaking on human fossils, hominid fossils, and human origins. And Bill Dembski will be there speaking on sort of his take on the state of intelligent design. So there's going to be a lot of great talks at this conference. There's other people as well. So please go to discovery.org/Dallas, and you can find a link to sign up for that conference.
That's pretty cool. And what is the date on that again? Just one more time.
Saturday, February 20th.
Okay. Well, let me just say that that would be really just a good combo with our own Thursday evening virtual banquet on February 18th at 7 o'clock, 7 to 8:30, when we're hosting Sean McDowell for our not only virtual banquet seminar as first of the webinars that we're doing this spring, along with Michael Behe, John Lennox, and hopefully, well, we've already got Jonathan Wells agreed, and I'm going to try to talk Doug Axe into joining us for that group of webinars. But we also have, of course, as well, Keith and Kristen Getty singing four songs, and we have the wonderful guest appearance of Dr. Steve Meyer giving us a preview of what he's going to be sharing in this webinar March 25th. So we got February 18th. That's our 7 p.m. virtual get together via, you know, the link that you'll be able to get through apologetics.org. And then your conference, people can watch it virtually?
Yeah, it'll be available online or they can watch it in person.
Okay, very good. And that's, of course, February 20th. So you know about the links at discovery.org and, of course, and apologetics.org. So let's get back into this exciting kind of update. You know, we're giving some highlights of the progress that have been made, the points of progress that are out there for everybody to see for intelligent design. And one of them to me is just, if I could just mention this, is to see the explosion, the mushrooming of ID interest across the world in places like Gunter Beckley, the formerly a materialist in his philosophy and famous fossil expert, I think was in dragonflies, if I remember.
Yes.
That's a specialty. And of course, he began reading the books by Behe and others 10 years ago and very sent out quiet feelers. And now he's working in conjunction with Discovery Institute, right?
Yeah, that's right. So Gunter was a paleontologist in Germany. He was the curator of, I believe, invertebrate fossils at a state-run museum, state-run natural history museum in Stuttgart, Germany. I'm probably mispronouncing that. And Gunter became progressively more and more skeptical of neo-Darwinism and more sympathetic towards intelligent design until the year 2015, when he officially announced on his, I believe it was on his personal website or Facebook page or something, that he was now a skeptic of Darwinism. But it was not until really 2016 and 2017 when he got more actively involved with the ID movement, when he wrote, I think, a couple blogs for evolutionnews.org and got involved with some Discovery Institute activities, that the museum really came down hard on him. They did not like the fact that he was becoming an active and an outspoken critic of neo-Darwinism. And so basically he was forced to resign from his position at the museum. But he is now working with Discovery Institute, working on some wonderful research, and also doing a lot of writing that people can read at evolutionnews.org.
That's tremendous, because he has influence on a whole rising generation of scholars that he can bring along in his wake. I think that's great. And of course, there's a lot going on in Brazil also, right?
There's a lot going on in Brazil. There's a huge nucleus of ID-friendly scientists and scholars in Brazil. Part of them are part with an organization called Discovery Institute at McKenzie University in Sao Paulo. And they have hosted quite a few ID speakers and are raising up a lot of interest in intelligent design in Brazil. In fact, this last year at Discovery Institute's summer seminar that we host every July for students to come and learn about ID. It was online this year, or last year, I should say, but we had a number of students from Brazil, and it's directly attributed to this interest that's being generated in ID because of the Discovery Institute McKenzie University chapter. We're getting these ID-friendly graduate students who are going on to get their PhDs and from Brazil, and it's really a wonderful thing. Günter, by the way, is not the only, what I would say, high profile defection from the Darwin community over the last few years. A couple years ago, there was also a computer scientist named David Galernter at Yale University who published an article, an essay in Claremont Review of Books, where he announced that he was now a critic of Darwin. He's not persuaded by ID, but he basically had read Stephen Meyer's book, Darwin's Doubt, and felt that Meyer made a compelling case against Darwinian evolution. And this caused quite a stir because Galernter is supposed to be, you know, a standard, toe the party line academic at Yale University in computer science. And he found Meyer's arguments against Darwin to be compelling. So we are seeing sort of these high profile defections from the Darwin camp over the last few years.
And if I could just put in a quick word, such stories as the Galernter and Günter Beckley, I don't know if they're actually included, but very similar stories are featured in my new posted document called Gamaliel's Speak Out. I wrote an overview of 21 academic figures over the last 50 years, including Thomas Nagel, Michael Denton, others who are not in any way, shape, or form signing on to the Judeo-Christian worldview, or at least the Christian worldview. And I think it's exciting to see those who are not necessarily in our camp at all speaking boldly, courageously, publicly, making points against the materialist worldview. And I think that, Casey, this is just steadily, just we're seeing more and more. And I guess my speculation is, if we had at a major university a couple of tenured professors who were in a safe spot and felt that they could break with the party line, this might be like a tectonic shift. I mean, and maybe we could, as a Christian, I and others can be praying about this. But couldn't we potentially see a further major breaking away in the coming months and years?
Well, I mean, I think that the progress of intelligent design is definitely pushing us in that direction, Tom. One of the most encouraging things that I see is that every year at Discovery Institute, we have a summer program for undergraduate, graduate students and postdocs, and even a few professors to come and learn about intelligent design. And over the years, I was actually just going through this recently. I mean, we now have close to 100 up-and-coming PhD students, some of them who have their PhDs now and are going forward to become tenured professors, like you said, who are doing ID research or are in the process of being trained so that they can do ID research. They're getting their degrees. So I would say that the fundamentals of ID are very strong. I think that these high-profile defections are obviously very interesting and encouraging. But Philip Johnson used to say that scientific revolutions happen one death at a time. Basically, as the old guard just sort of naturally retires and goes their own way, but then you have new up-and-coming scientists who are open-minded and not beholden to the old ways of thinking, and they start to see merit to these new ideas like intelligent design. And that's exactly what we see happening, mm-hmm. is that there is an up-and-coming crop of graduate students who are going to come up, and they're going to become faculty, and in the future, I think we're going to see them taking leadership roles in the ID community and taking it forward.
Fantastic. And Nick, I think we have, a couple minutes left? We're good to ask one more question?
Yeah, we got about 3.5 minutes.
Okay, very good. So let me just ask you real quickly, if someone comes to you, I've been dying to ask this of Casey Luskin, geology PhD now. Someone comes up to you and says, well, hey, you know, and I could have said this when I was a freshman at Princeton, when I was a dyed-in-the-wool Darwinist and an atheist. So someone comes up to you and says, well, you know, I heard that you're pro-ID, but wait a minute, you're a geologist, you know geology. The fossil record is a plenitude of proof for evolution. 2 minutes. Why is that statement misguided? Or how would you answer that person who says, you know, fossils are a slam dunk, Darwin wins?
Yeah, so I would point them to look at the larger scale patterns in the fossil record. And what we see in the fossil record is a pattern of explosions where new forms of life will appear abruptly without direct evolutionary precursors. And they often will disappear abruptly as well. What we don't see, typically at least, is this sort of gradual evolutionary buildup, what Darwin's theory predicted, this finely gradated chain of transitional forms. That is definitely the exception of what we might find in the fossil record rather than the rule. The rule tends to be abrupt explosions of new types of life forms, mass biodiversity appearing in short geological time periods without any clear evidence of where they came from, evolutionarily speaking. So that has actually caused quite a few, and this pattern has been widely recognized by the paleontological community. And that has caused many scientists to say that, look, we don't see these non-Darwinian patterns. We don't see these Darwinian patterns in the fossil record. We see these non-Darwinian patterns. So evolutionary biologists have put forth various proposals like punctuated equilibrium or other modes of evolution to try to explain why we don't see these transitional forms in the fossil record, at least not like we should if Darwin's theory is true. I think most of these counter proposals fail. I think if we just take the fossil record at face value, what we see is the exact opposite of what Darwin's theory would expect us to find when it comes to transitional forms.
Yeah, and I mean, when Stephen Jay Gould, before he died, I think around 2002, you know, somewhere around 18 years ago, he produced this massive, you know, book, you know, on evolutionary theory. And in it, I believe he said, I need to tell my fellow geologists to say, to repeat to themselves 10 times before breakfast, stasis, which means the lack of evolution in the fossil record. Stasis is data, stasis is data, stasis is data. Like a mantra, just so that they can get that into their thick heads. I thought that was amazing. So in 30 seconds, the Cambrian explosion is still an outstanding example of this sudden appearance in stasis.
Oh, definitely. Yeah. The Cambrian explosion is an event that took place about 520 to 530 million years ago and under the standard viewpoint. And it basically during this, we saw nearly all of the major animal phyla appear abruptly in the fossil record without any direct evolutionary precursors. And those phyla, most of those phyla persist to this day. So it is sort of like a form of stasis. I mean, there are definitely forms that appear later as well that did not exist in the Cambrian. But again, when those forms do appear, they appear in an abrupt manner, not in a Darwinian fashion. So we just see this pattern repeating over and over again in the fossil record.
Wow. What a hoot it has been. What a joy and delight to have Casey Luskin, Associate Director of the Center for Science and Culture. I hope I got your title correct, but it's great to have you with us and love to have you back on the program from time to time in 2021 and beyond, if that's okay with you.
It's great to be here with you, Tom. It's been quite a few years, and I'm happy to be back on the show with you. Thanks for having me.
Thank you once again for being here. It was a huge blessing to have you on. And thank you for listening. We will see you back here next week on The Universe Next Door.